Thanks for letting me talk. And today I will talk about Kazhan-Lushi correspondence for class of Lie super algebras. And in the abstract, I said the two appear, but I think should be a little conservative and just say in prep we have like a section to write, but like things usually take longer. Anyways, so this is the structure of today's presentation. First, I will tell you about our main statement, which is this Kazhan-Lushi correspondence for these class of Lie super algebras. And then I will go into the proof. And the proof is comes in two steps. And the first step is to realize the categories as both categories as a relative Grünfeld center. And then to show that these categories that show up in the relative center are equivalent. And then the proof will use the technique of screening operators. And finally, I'll discuss the action of these quantum groups on matrix factorizations. Great. So Kazhan-Lushi correspondence concerns the relation between braided tensor categories. And these braided tensor categories are important objects in the study of a three-dimensional TQFT. And these are the category of line operators. So to my knowledge, there are three ways of obtaining a braided tensor category. You can start with a quasi-triangular Hopf algebra and take its category representations. Or you can take representations, suitable category representations of vertex operator algebra. Or you can take a trace of a monoidal two category. So I won't go and talk about the third one. I'm not familiar with it. So the Kazhan-Lushi correspondence is a relation between the two. I think it's just there are advantages and disadvantages for using either one or two. The category, the structure of braided tensor category coming from vertex operator algebra is usually very complicated. So it's preferable if you want to compute braiding or things like that. It's preferable to use quasi-triangular Hopf algebra. The famous example is we all know the transcendence theory. If given a simple Lie group G and then level K, here both of these first two kind of ways of obtaining braided tensor category show up here. So in terms of VOA, there is this integral highest weight quotient of this affine Lie algebra, and from these, you can define the Kazhan-Lushi category. This is a category of modules for these simple Lie algebra, these simple VOA. And on the other hand, there is a quantum group. From this quantum group, this is a quasi-triangular Hopf algebra. From it, you can define Lustig's integral representation. So the first ingredient was used in Witten's categorification of Jones polynomial, and the second was used to in Reshtchik and Turayev's construction of three-manifold invariants. And both of them uses a semi-simplification of this category, but the category themselves can be non-semi-simple depending on the choice of Q. And this is a very difficult theorem, first proved by Grünfeld in the case where Q is generic, and later on by Kazhan-Lushtig, that for the choice of K that's not a positive rational number and avoiding some small rules of unity, these two braided tensor categories are actually equivalent. So that's like this is a very famous theorem of Kazhan-Lushtig. Cool, so that's the example in transcendence theory. That's an example that people know. So our goal is to extend this equivalence to Lie super algebras associated to B-twist of 3D to 4 abelian gauge theory. So the definition of such a theory and this Lie super algebra involved the choice of such a matrix, an integer valued matrix. And we assume that this integer valued matrix will determine a U1 to the R action on this vector space C to the N. And with this, physicists defined a 3D to 4 theory whose gauge group is this U1 to the R. And we were interested in the category of line operators. And the work of Costello and Gaiotto shows that like the B twist, the topological twist of this theory, has a Dirichlet type boundary condition, and it supports a boundary vertex operator algebra. The vertex algebra is a non-predictable completion of an affine Lie superalgebra, and I write down the Lie superalgebra here. So here pi here is the parity shift. So the even part is T star of the Lie algebra G. Here G is the Lie algebra of U1 to the R, and then they have this commutation relation. So we were interested in the category of line operators in these abelian gauge theories, and therefore we use these representations of these VOA to define this braided tensor category. So establishing a Kachanov-Lucci correspondence will allow us to have a quantum group description of the category, in which it's easier to compute braidings and monodromy and so on and so forth. Cool. So I'll state our main result. So we have this vertex algebra built from this affine Lie superalgebra, and it has a Kachanov-Lucci category. And then we have a quasi-triangular Hopf algebra, which is generated by the same set of generators, except I changed the commutation relation here. If you look at the previous slides, the commutation relation, this psi plus psi minus, a commute to E, now it commute to an exponential of E minus one. At the beginning, this we kind of just guessed what the result should be, and then later on we justify that this is the correct answer. So we prove the following theorem, which is that there is the equivalence of braided tensor categories between VOA representation and quantum group representations. So that's the main statement of what I will tell you today. Is there any comments or questions so far? Cool. So the proof will consist of two steps. These steps are outlined in a recent work of Kruse, Lant, and Rupert. So the steps are the following. So first, you recognize both categories as some relative Drinfeld centers of some simpler categories. And then show that the simpler categories are equivalent. And then I will tell you that the original categories are equivalent. Let me be more precise about it. I guess let me give you an example first. So when rho is equal to 1, this Lie superalgebra is just GL1 slash 1. And the quantum group is this unrolled quantum group of GL1 slash 1 with the following braiding. And the equivalence will tell you that then I can use this quantum group and this braiding to compute whatever I want. Great. So sorry. Sorry, say again. The non-predictive answer will just be your bosons plus three fermions. So I would say the non-predictable answer would be the one where I get rid of E, so I uproll, and then I require N to X semi-simply with integer eigenvalues.
Okay, no, this was ending to, do you have a recipe to guess the non-predictable version of these statements?
To get non-predictable version, to guess.
Yeah, you know, so you can give a relation with a description of the non-predictable parallelism. Do you know how to call from that to the non-perturbative answer?
I'm not sure. I think it's like a case by case. So from this equivalence, I think the answer is no. So we actually thought about the non-abelian gauge group example. And there, indeed, there are like so there is a similar thing where there's a quantum group that is associated to the Lie algebra, and that there is a quantum group that is associated to the group. And the one associated to the group is kind of embedded into the one associated to the Lie algebra in the same way that these ones embed into the... Right. Yes.
There is some natural object in this quantum group. And if it can be expressed as representations of a different quantum group.
Yeah, I'm not sure I know the answer. Here, like, I know the answer because, like, it's I know how to complete the primitive
in a way. But, yeah.
But yeah, thanks for the question. Cool. So now I will tell you how we can express both categories as relative centers. So we start with the quantum group. So this algebra itself is actually a relative Drinfeld double. If we take B of rho to be the subalgebra generated by N, E, and psi plus, so I take kind of a Borel part, and then take the torus H rho to be the subalgebra of N and E, then one can show that this quantum group can be constructed as a relative double. So the relative double is you take the Borel and take its dual, and take the cross product. There's going to be a relation, and you quotient out by there's going to be a center that's equivalent to H, isomorphic to H rho, or you quotient out by that. This is a simple computation, but the categorical meaning of this is that the representation of this quantum group is a relative Drinfeld center. It's the relative Drinfeld center of a B of rho relative to representations of H of rho. So here, H of rho is already a quasi-triangular Hopf algebra. B of rho is a Hopf algebra. It's not quasi-triangular. It doesn't have an R matrix. So representation B of rho is only a tensor category. Representation of H of rho is a braided tensor category. So, sorry?
This is the possibly transparent physical meaning. As I said, is H of rho the quantum group that controls a theory without matter?
Yes, right? Yes. It's the quantum group associated with like a trivial a U1 gauge theory without matter.
And then this view of rho must be somehow associated to interface.
Yeah, yeah. I think this is trying to say that like the trivial interface is a deformation of two copies of these interfaces.
Yes.
And the collision. I think there are like statements about the VOA that people are trying to formulate, but
and
that's related to the screening operator. I think the statement is that like the module, you can construct this boundary VOA from the boundary VOA of the trivial theory by adding a screening operator, and the screening operator I think precisely does the job of colliding the interface. Well, sorry. Let me give you the definition of a relative center. So if I take a monoidal category, the center is the subcategory of objects together with the functorial braiding with everything else. So these are objects that are already allowed to pass from one side to the other. So relative, the Drinfeld center is always a braided monoidal category. So now if I have a subcategory of the center of B, then the relative center are those objects in the center. Now they already have functorial braiding. Now I require that they braid trivially with elements in H. This is the definition of relative center. So algebraically, forming this relative Drinfeld double is the same as forming the relative Drinfeld center. Cool. So now I see that the quantum group is a relative center of something that's a little bit easier. Now, what about the vertex algebra? Well, this is the kind of the strategy outlined in the work of Krusig, Lattner, and Rupert that we use a free field realization. So the vertex algebra itself embeds into a lattice VOA. It's an extension of Heisenberg by some Fock modules. So this lattice VOA is a VOA, so it has an intertwining operator. So this defines an algebra object in this Cajun Alushi category. So it's, I view this as a module together with a multiplication. So then we have two categories. So I can consider the categories of A modules and the category of local A modules. And if you translate that into the definition, the category of A modules is just modules of the Cajun Alushi category together with a possibly logarithmic action of W. But the statement that the requirement is this restriction of this action to V has to be non-logarithmic. And the local modules just means that now I have a non-logarithmic action, a genuine action of the VOA. And what I already said, these people, they showed that under certain conditions, so if I take a VOA and a category V module U, let's say that you already know is a braided tensor category, and suppose I have a VOA containing V, and this VOA is going to define an algebra object in this braided tensor category U, then if you assume a list of kind of very easy to check conditions, not all of them are easy, but they're relatively easy to check, then there is actually a fully faithful functor from U to the relative Grünfeld center. So now if I have such a free field realization, then I have another way of kind of going from my category to a relative center. And these list of easy to check conditions are satisfied by my VOA and my Cajun Alushi category. So I have the following, here I have another example. Then back to the example of GL1-1, this embeds into a set of Heisenberg generated by X and Y, and a BC free fermion. Here, X and Y satisfy the following OPE. And this simple assignment is an embedding, and you can show that the image is in the kernel of the screening operator S. So S defines a map from this VOA to its module, and this V is the kernel. Okay, so we have the following pictures. So we have the first line is the quantum group, the second line is VOA, and I have some braided tensor categories, and on the left hand side I have some tensor category in the middle, and like the relative center of this picture will be the braided tensor category that I'm looking for. So basically, if I can show that these vertically, the first two vertical lines are equivalent with the suitable compatibility conditions, then I'll have something on the right-hand side. So if these simpler categories are equivalent, then at least I have a fully faithful functor into the quantum group. So I can at least express my category fully faithfully into the quantum group. And later on, it's very easy then to show that this fully faithful functor is actually an equivalence. It turns out that the first equivalence is very simple. It's basically tracing through definition. The definition tells you a local A module is an honest module of the VOA, and in the case when you have a Heisenberg VOA, then like the category you already know very well. So for example, in this example of modules of this VOA, like they are genuinely just modules of a pair of commutative algebra of two variables.
C here is a representation of
So the exponential of Z is really B, yeah, it's bosonization. Yeah, thank you. So you see that like this part is very simple. Doesn't require much work. This equivalence is more complicated, and it's achieved by using the idea of screening operators, which I will turn to next. but is there any question? Great. So what is a screening operator? So if I take a VOA, let's say W, W will be my free field algebra here. Let M be a module, and this M is going to be whatever the screening operator will take value in. And then I have an intertwining operator Y of that form. I mean, there's always such an intertwining operator. A screening operator will be determined by the choiceman element in this module. And this intertwining operator will give me a map from W to M, and I take the residue. So such a map is called a screening operator. And it turns out that the kernel is always a sub-VOA. The kernel always has the vertex algebra structure. And as I've shown you in one example of GL1/1, like this boundary VOA and its free field realization fits into such a situation. So there's always a module together with a screening operator that whose kernel is my VOA. So if I take U to be the category V modules, and then A, the algebra defined by W, then there is some old work of Semikatov and Tipunin where they conjecture the relation between possibly logarithmic modules with Nicole's algebra of the screening operators. More precisely, if I take my module M, and I can always define a tensor algebra of M. Since M is a local A module, this object is in fact a Hopf algebra object in local A modules. And Nicole's algebra has multiple definitions. It could be defined as the universal quotient of this tensor algebra, or is to be the Hopf algebra quotient of the tensor algebra by the kernel of the so-called braided symmetrizer maps. And the conjecture of Semikatov and Tipunin is that in good situations, the category of A modules, this possibly logarithmic modules of the VOA, is the same as a representation of this Nicole's algebra. And this is only a conjecture, and the difficulty is that this Nicole's algebra is very difficult to compute in general, like, because the kernel of the braided symmetrizer map is hard to compute in general. But there is one situation where it is easier to compute is when there is different types, and there is the so-called diagonal type where the braiding is just given by a diagonal matrix. And then here, we're going to assume something even simpler, that the diagonal matrix is just minus one. So for the purpose of applying to our situation, we're going to restrict to the case where M is a simple current and the braiding is just minus one on itself. And in this case, it's already computed. We already know that the Nicole's algebra is just a nilpotent algebra. It's just the identity plus this module, and the multiplication is just zero on M. Cool. So we actually need to prove this again. It's not something just automatically true. It's still a conjecture. We need to give the following assumptions kind of to make a proof work. So we assume that our W has two Heisenberg fields, where one of them is of level one and then generate a U1 action. So this first Heisenberg module, Heisenberg field is used to define spectral flow automorphisms. So I'm going to use the first module to generate a sequence of simple modules that satisfy very simple fusion rule and very simple braiding. The braiding will just be minus one. And then I'll define V to be the kernel of the screening operator, given by the exponential of this Heisenberg. And I need a sufficiently unrolled condition. Basically, we need a statement that basically tells me that a module and its spectral flow has to be different. I have to be able to distinguish the two. And the sufficiently unrolled condition just says that the generalized eigenvalue of B will act differently on M and its spectral flow. So with these conditions, we have the following statement that, first of all, the Nicole's algebra is very simple because in this case, the Brady symmetrizer is simple. And therefore, the Nicole's algebra is just this two-term sum. And moreover, there is an equivalence of tensor categories between A modules and representations. So the idea of this proof is that with all these assumptions, we can actually obtain a tensor functor from A modules to local A modules. So we can show that every module will have a very canonical filtration. The filtration is going to be given by generalized eigenvalue of B such that the associated graded are all local. And moreover, one show that this is a fully faithful map into this category and with some work show that it's equivalent. So here I use both of these two fields. One of them I use to construct this spectral flow, and another I use to kind of grade my to give a canonical filtration to all my modules.
Sorry, I guess a question. So just to make sure I understand, so the theorem holds on the condition that the assumptions are satisfied.
Yeah. The theorem holds on the condition that you have these assumptions.
Can you indicate what the difficulty is? It looks like this. Maybe I'm naive here.
Sorry, say again.
Can you indicate what the difficulty is concerning the assumption? It looks to me as if it should be possible to check these assumptions.
Yeah. In our case, we kind of just check an assumption by hand. So it's these are not difficult.
There's a kind of abstract axioms.
Yeah.
Statements of this type and some generality.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the thing is we can't prove something general. So when we wrote this down, I had the idea of singlet in mind, where singlet is going to be generated with something of this form, except you have to replace this level one by like p over two, Again, we're lucky in this situation because it's very easy to analyze the category, the structure of the objects. It's easier to compute fusion product, but for singlets for general p it's more complicated. When I wrote down these assumptions, I had in mind I want to study singlet VOA and its modules. Thanks for the question. Any other questions? Yes. So now we can apply it to our situation, and again, if you remember this, I don't have it here in the previous example in GL1/1 case, it's all satisfied. Maybe I can go back. Sorry. Yeah. Hi. GL1/1. So here my B will of course be this screening. My A will be this screening operator Z minus Y. My A will be this X. Right. So this screening operator will not only increase the mode of Z, the will change the action of Z zero. It also changes the action of X zero. So that kind of allows me to grade my modules in a way that is compatible with the action. Yeah, so that's an example. Cool. Right. So combined with the functor S, we just obtained a fully faithful functor. Now, it's actually not hard to show that this must be an equivalence. And the reason is because we can already know that this is equivalent to this as an abelian category. So the idea is that I have a fully faithful functor, and I already know that these two are equivalent as abelian categories, and therefore this fully faithful functor must be an equivalence. Yeah, so that gives us the equivalence that we are looking for. And as you can see, this kind of expresses both category as some relative center. And now we start thinking about if we can prove something in general, because if I replace this Lie group, I was focusing on abelian case. If I replace this abelian Lie group by a non-abelian Lie group, this category is still a relative center. One thing we have been thinking about is whether this can tell me something about the free field realization of the VOA, because we really don't have a Cajun-Lucci category there. There's no candidate there, at least for non-abelian engagements. But if one can somehow find some screening operators that might, we might be in business then. And as in this case, the screening operator are all determined by the form of this quantum group. This B of rho, this Borel part really tells me what screening operator I'm looking for. So our hope is that this can tell us something about non-abelian case.
I wonder if you might need some kind of parabolic extraction on the group.
Say again?
Right. For some linearizing problems.
Yeah. I guess I'm not as familiar with free field realizations and for affine for the non-abelian cases, but
I mean the same with fusion quantum loop is like the double of the parabola.
Right. So yes.
Okay, as you call it. Non-abelian fusion related simply to these observations that the screening charges generate the nilpotent subalgebra of the polygon.
Yeah. Yes.
And then that is where everything's coming from. And probably this quotient that you take in the definition of these Nichols algebra is then that example concretely just the quotient free algebra by the serial relations.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I wonder somehow this kind of new technology that you and your collaborators develop may also be useful then and simplify and helpful for these non-abelian situations.
Even for the region, that's not those things. Even for the
region. Yeah, that is a question to ask whether one could repeat the original Cajun-Lucci in this context, maybe at this stream some research project. I think it's a natural question.
Because then you can take high regards, which was cash.
Okay, so I guess one needs to develop something, prove something more general than what we did here. The screening charge needs to have here we assume just diagonal braiding. But I guess people know the braiding in general. If you have if the braiding matrix is given by some Cartan matrix, then as you said, the associated Nichols algebra is precisely the one quotient out by the serial relation.
In a generic situation, we should have what we need, because people in the past have computed, for example, have shown that the screen charges are the serial relations. That is a difficult computation, but people have done this. Principle might be the basis for applying such a gene in case of generic deformation parameter, but I could of course imagine very complicated situations with like group of unity situations where you might come up with different relations and stuff. Mm.
Yeah, in fact, like in the case of singlet, like the singlet corresponds to root of unity for the restricted quantum group, and there, like, yeah, the relation is some power of it, it's zero. Thank you. Okay, finally, I want to describe how these quantum groups act on matrix factorizations. So we consider the following setup. So I take my X to be this space, it's T star of V times G, and this potential function W. And I can from this, I can define this matrix factorization. So this category is actually a monoidal category, whose monoidal structure is given by the following push-pull diagram. So I have two copies of X, and I pull it back towards, I pull back a matrix factorization towards this map, and then push forward using the second map. And you can show that the pullback of this dub of this potential along these two maps coincide on the middle one. So we really have a diagram of correspondences. First of all, I want to say that this category is actually like So if I view this 3D and 4 theory as like Rozansky-Winton theory on this kind of singular the stack equation space, then I think according to the work developed by Kapustin and Rozansky, this would actually be the answer to the category line operators. So they would write down something like a matrix factorization in this form, and what we found is that like this quantum group actually precisely come from some kind of Kujou duality of these matrix factorizations. So the Kujou duality is as follows. So since W is a quadratic potential, I can take an object, this like structure sheaf of G, and view this as a matrix factorization with zero differential, and it embeds into it by the zero section. So T star V, X is a quadratic bundle, I take the zero section. So if I compute the derived endomorphism, the result is precisely a Clifford algebra. And this Clifford algebra is generated by the dual of T star V, and together with a commutation relation that says that the commutator is a second derivative of W. So this tells me that there's an equivalence between the category generated by this object and the modules of this Clifford algebra. So this Clifford algebra is precisely the quantum group. It's a subalgebra. So if I recognize this exponential of this generator E as functions on G, then the Clifford algebra is a subalgebra. So then I can define the action of these extra fields N, and they are just given by the equivariant action of G. So therefore, every object in this category is actually canonically acted on by this quantum group that we see, and the above is actually equivalence of monoidal categories. So what we found is that this equivalence between this subcategory matrix factorization and the Clifford algebra modules is actually one of monoidal categories. And that these categories are in fact braided, and the braiding is what will be given by the R matrix action from quantum group, because now R matrix does act on these matrix factorizations. Cool, so that's all I want to share today. Yeah, thank you very much for your attention. Yeah.
Last statement.
Yep. This statement. I guess, yeah, so my understanding is that Like if you view your category as
I mean, isn't it that the BOA is on the boundary of the 3D theory and you're computing B-twist line operators in the 3D theory and
yeah.
you BOA modules by ending on the conformal?
No, I understand the definition of two-dimension mathematics factorizations, but I guess that
So this matrix factorization comes from kind of taking the center of a two category. I guess something that I didn't really see. So in there they define a two category of interfaces, and these interfaces are defined as like so. If you have a symplectic manifold, it's defined as like some fibration over a Lagrangian.
Okay, and then you have theta.
Yeah, right. So this category is defined from that by taking the endomorphism. So the endomorphism becomes matrix factorizations. So I guess like we're just saying like these different perspectives can all unify one way or another.
That was the term that I had in here. Initially, you had at least three ways to get there.
Right, I guess, yeah, I didn't really say. Right. So like I think when you write this down, it's kind of like abstractly it's a trace of a two category, therefore it's a braided monoidal category. So like in algebra geometry like the braiding of this should come from some natural transformation between push and pull diagrams. To my knowledge, I don't think people like really can write down what that really is. I've asked people, and even in a simple case, like if I don't have a group, I just have T star V. Like, what's the braiding coming from this these committed diagrams? I'm not sure people have an answer to, but like, I think we're just giving a more explicit answer of like. What's the R matrix, for example?
Now, how much of this argument would remain for the Hamiltonian G?
All of these actually are true. In fact, this part actually don't really require G to be abelian. In fact, like, so the quantum group might need to be modified. You can't write something like, so if you recall my in the previous slide. Is my quantum group. So this R matrix, right? Like I have to pick some N and E. You can't do that for non-abelian groups. But the idea is that it's still a relative double. So in fact I can describe the so my quantum group is gonna look like something of the following form. It's the group algebra of G acting on this Clifford algebra. And then I have the structure sheaf of G, and the ring of functions on G. Now the braiding is going to be given by the braiding R is going to be given by R1 times R2, where R1 is the following map. I can take a module. A module of this thing will have two structures. It have an action of OG and an action of G. So a G module, sorry. So this is a two modules. So I first use the fact that V is a G module. A G module is the same as an OG co-module. So I have this natural map. And then W is a module of the OG, so I can now map to and as you can see, this map is precisely like saying that a module of these two guys is a center, is a Drinfeld center. So the Drinfeld center of coherent sheaves on G, or sorry, rep G, is coherent sheaves on G mod G adjoint. So I can describe the braiding on the center using this kind of diagram. And then R2 is exponential of pi plus psi minus. It's expressed exactly the same way. So yeah, so basically, like, from we really believe that the quantum group for non-abelian gauge theory has to be this Clifford algebra. And right, it's non-perturbative. Yeah. The problem is that we don't have a candidate for the VOA. So.
What makes it non-perturbative?
Because there's it's G equivalent, not the algebra equivalent, right? Or
right.
Yeah. So. Yeah, and also some questions I've been like interested in thinking about is like, as you know, we don't have a definition for we don't have explicit definition for non-abelian perturbative, non-abelian VOA, boundary VOA, but there is a definition using chiral algebras. You can take the vertex algebra, put it onto as a bundle over the affine Grassmannian, and whatever it is, has to be the cohomology. Like in the abelian case, the geometry of affine Grassmannian is very simple, so one can actually do this computation explicitly and show that the VOA really is just this extension. But whatever the non-abelian case is, it has to be the cohomology. Just from this discussion about relative Grünfeld center and the screening operator, and whatever that non-abelian VOA is, it has to have some embedding into some simpler vertex algebras. I think it would be nice to we don't have a definition explicitly, but we know it's the cohomology of affine Grassmannian. If there is some kind of, if one can do something geometrically, that would be
very nice.
Yeah, otherwise I wouldn't know how to deal with a boundary VOA.
Permission
structures.
Yes, ways to build the non-chiral thing or something.
You mean like a cup and cap?
Yeah, chiral and cap of parts in some model invariant ways. There must be some notion of sort of star categories, submission categories, and show what the right ones are.
Yeah, I'm not sure. If I understand correctly, you want
opposite category, opposite breaking instrument. There must be some complex conjugation at some point, right? In terms of categories, it will just be, you don't have to conjugate it, it's just that you want the categories, the interest, right? And then, but of course, you have to make sure.
Things, a very sophisticated thing, and yes, there are
some loose thing I would bet that it's unstable about admission representations of the complex 500 group. And that would play a role in understanding why.
I mean, something like that is not very easy to see, right? So this is true. I mean, the analog diagonal pairing should be easy to see something once one has some cash on the same time.
And that's to say that, like, it's very. Now we know that in this digital class theories, it's important to look at things like spherical principal series surface and to see that it's not like a tensor product of.
Well, but this
to be
out of this, because, well, I mean, conceptually, I think in a very serious sense, it's meaning out of this frame, right? So here, it's very clear. A structure of a category of representation of some polymorphic UA representations. You can then pair it with the corresponding anti-homomorphic objects and then try to make it one satisfy single variables completely. The difference in H3 is that there is no real sense to speak of the categories of separately polymorphic and anti-homomorphic representations to begin with. Better think of these representations as being representations of. So you should start from the category of representations of the left Gassendi and the right Gassendi at the same time. So
yes.
The combined object which combines at the very beginning the polymorphic.
That's right. And it's that category is what issues pairing of the two things in a sense. It's like Morita. And like it's slightly by models, it's still a by model, right? You can still test so these things with.
Okay. Yeah, I think this is going relatively far into the future. I was at some point thinking of a radically different perspective, namely that it may be part of the characterization of, say, good modules for this category. They allow single value conformal blocks, so then basically the conformal block is the partition function. That notion.
Even first, it seems to example as a Bethe-Bettinger system. Right, if I'm in the Ramon sector, and assume more so the homomorphic and the homomorphic and the systems. So I have beta 0, gamma 0, and beta 1, gamma, beta bar 0, gamma bar 0. The natural thing to do is to say, okay, I put there a true multiple functions of C, where gamma is act on multiplication and beta act as derivatives. Right, then we have the 0 example, right? Non-carbon beta gamma system must know that there is this. Hyperspace, which is a direction which is zero modes, but it's not the highest way from a locus way or what else? Anyway, so I think I'm going too far.
If there's no other questions, thank you.